Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? The champs punch back and blow out the Lakers 127-100. Welcome to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And D, they made some clever adjustments last night, both in terms of lineup and schematic. Right, Steph went from 3 assists in game 1 to 12. Jamichael Green got the start ahead of Kevon Looney. But the first quarter was actually good. The Lakers were up 6 or 7 at the end of 1. And then in the middle quarters, the second and third quarter, by the end of the third, we're down 30. So going from up 7 to down 30 in the span of 2 quarters, that's really where the game was lost. So talk to me about what you saw last night in game 2 against the Warriors.
So I think when two fairly evenly matched teams, and I guess we'll see by the end of the series how evenly matched these teams actually are, but coming in, I thought it was a pretty evenly matched series. And game 1 went a certain way, and I think the result that you see in game 2 often comes down to multiple things being true at the same time, which is, one, you mentioned adjustments. I thought the Warriors made some nice adjustments. I thought the Lakers did not adjust very much to those adjustments that were made within the context of the flow of the game. I thought they just continued to play things in a pretty vanilla way, and we'll get into that a little bit more later. But I also thought the Lakers, equating it just to effort is, I don't know if that's the right way, but their intensity and commitment to the thing that they were doing was not as high as it was in game 1. And I think that's how you end up losing a game by as much as the Lakers lost this game, particularly in the middle portions. And I would add the desperation from the Warriors. And that's probably at the top level. The Warriors played with a sense of, if we lose this game, the series is over. And they adjusted to tweak some of the things that they were doing in order to be more successful against the Lakers' coverages. The Lakers basically played very similar coverages to what they played in game 1, with a little bit of tweak of who's defending who because of the lineup change in which Kevon Looney did not start. And their commitment to that execution was not as high and was not as dialed in as it was the game before. And so this is just a small piece of it, and I'm not putting this on Vanderbilt at all, but I'm using it as an example to the point that I'm making around being committed to something. In game 1, Jared Vanderbilt probably denied inbound passes to Stephen Curry after made baskets. Like, he must have done that in the first half a dozen times, 8 times, 9 times, where basically they just couldn't inbound the ball to Steph, or Steph couldn't get it in the backcourt, or he was pressuring him so much Steph was giving the ball up. And that basically didn't happen at all in this game. Vando was back there, but he just didn't have the same drive and legs and commitment to doing it. And that was true of pretty much everyone defensively. And I think that's how you lose by a bunch. And credit to the Warriors. I should have said that at the top. They played an excellent basketball game, and the Lakers did not. And they lost by nearly 30 points. What was it like for you, Mike?
Yeah, it was a prideful effort from the Warriors, and I think that they were not trying to let game two of this series be the end of their potential dynasty, as it's still unclear what's going to happen next year. Are they going to re-sign Draymond? Is Klay going to be back? Like, that stuff is still up in the air, and you can kind of feel that up in the Bay, where this is clearly a very beloved team for the best of reasons because of all that they delivered to that fan base. And, you know, they weren't ready to go out yet, and they're still extremely good. And then on the flip side, you have a Laker team who actually starts out well. Remember, they led by 7 after the first quarter. Anthony Davis played that first quarter, and he wasn't scoring. He wasn't getting the same looks. Well, I shouldn't say that. He was getting some of the same looks, but it was Draymond on him. So, like, when it seems like it's the same look, but you're getting pushed in your lower body in a little bit of a different way, you just don't have quite as much space. But he had 4 assists. And defensively, they were okay in the shot-making from LeBron, and then Rui, when he came in, kind of kept things afloat. But the overall connectivity to the game and the energy just wasn't quite the same. And it was one of those things that I always try to explain, and I don't know if I've ever had the best, most simple example if you just haven't been in a lot of these games. But it's kind of like if you don't get your taxes done the year before and you're extra motivated to not miss the deadline, you have to have some sort of a, because otherwise you might just go up until that actual day to file the taxes. Like, you might, there's this human nature element where if you've experienced something in a certain way, and that's what happens in the NBA with schedule losses for the most part. It's essentially, yes, part of it is physical, but most of it is mental. Where, Darius, you were just mentioning the stuff with Vanderbilt. Like, he, in game one, they didn't feel like they could afford to let Steph have that kind of a space on an inbounds, and that extended to the whole roster. And in this game, especially when they started making shots early, it just became like, I guess that can be afforded at least a little bit, and certainly much more than it was for the Warriors, who were super crisp in all of their movements. And just think about how much Klay Thompson was running to get to open spots and just seemed like he was wide open. But how did he get to that spot? Like, making really inspired type of choices and where he was going with his cuts. And then how Draymond Green, who I thought was probably the best player in the game. Well, Steph was, but like the way that Draymond lifted his game from game one just made such a difference. So all of these elements are going together, and it reminds me of playoffs past, where veteran teams, even though the Lakers have a lot of young guys, kind of traded blows in a way. In this one, as opposed to, it was like the Memphis series, where that Memphis team, just their foot was on the pedal, even in the games that they weren't playing well. And there was no real recourse for the Lakers in that context. And they got beat in those games. But this game felt a little bit different, even from the games in Memphis, where and I think that just goes to how good the Warriors are.
For sure. And they pose some problems for the Lakers that I think that their adjustments make them contrary to the Lakers' weaknesses, right? Like, so for example, Austin running around and chasing Klay on defense, I think, is frying his legs on the offensive end. We'll talk about him a little bit more later. And there's a reason why teams in those circumstances have won like 15 straight games, that have lost a game one and won a game two. But if that's all the Lakers take out of it, it was like, oh yeah, we probably weren't going to win this one anyway, then they're going to lose game three, 2D. And so the Jermichael Green start, I think, has a chain reaction effect that kind of started the ball rolling down the hill in the second quarter. And so I want to talk about the middle of the game where they really kicked our butts, because by the fourth quarter, it was garbage time. And it started with Looney getting more minutes to start the second quarter, right? And we were texting each other about, they have quite a lineup out there, the Golden State Warriors do, against the Lakers unit that does not have AD in it. And that Wenyen Looney matchup, I think, is a particularly bad one. He's just way too big for Wenyen. And we saw Tristan Thompson get some minutes in that fourth quarter. That makes me wonder if he's an option in those kind of second quarter non-AD minutes going forward as well. And we haven't even brought up Anthony Davis, who is a way different player in game two than he was in game one. So take that whatever direction you want, D, but I think that the Lakers are going to have to make some adjustments if they want to win game three.
Yeah. When was the first time I texted you guys something about the short roll? Was it like 4 minutes into the game?
Yeah, it was very early. How does that, what is the short roll and how does that happen for our listeners?
Warriors run a pick and roll with Steph handling the ball, and Draymond comes up to set the screen. Because Steph is such a good shooter, the Lakers are lifting up their defensive coverage and they are playing higher at the level or even above the level of the screen in order to corral Steph. Yeah, and in this last game, it was AD. And that creates a little window, a little pocket. And so when you run a screen and roll, the purpose of a screen and roll is to have the guy who has the ball to dribble around the screen and go towards the basket. And then the guy who set the screen, he rolls with you in tandem. And the best execution of that is like what we've seen happen with Anthony Davis a bunch, where he gets downhill and he gets like an alley-oop for a dunk. And they call that a screen and roll and whatever, right? I sound like I'm teaching a freaking sixth grade clinic. Anyways, the short roll happens when they do not allow that guard to turn the corner. And that way the pass has to come much earlier. And you're hitting the roll man way earlier within the context of his roll, right? And so he's not into the paint. And in Draymond's case, he was catching the ball sometimes like a step inside the three-point line or even at the three-point line. And now he's playing on the backside 4-on-3. And so when you talk about adjustments, Pete, this is a defensive coverage that the Warriors are very familiar with. Mm-hmm. It's not something new for them. And the Lakers sat in this coverage all game.
Yeah.
And if the game and after the game, so Mike was great. And I'm assuming the Warriors PR people were sending this stuff out because I've gotten this stuff from them before too. But they send you all the quotes from all of the post game availabilities of all of their players and everyone who speaks. So Mike was pretty great. And he sent us a bunch of quotes last night from Steve Kerr and from Draymond Green. And one of the things, and so I don't have any tone context for any of these, but they're basically saying like, we played simple basketball. We made the play that was in front of us. They talked about playing with more force and all this other stuff, and all that stuff was true, but they played a very basic style of Warriors basketball. And if you've watched the Warriors over the years at all, this is what they do. People put two on the ball against Steph. He passes out and Draymond gets downhill and they play 4-on-3 and Draymond makes a bunch of decisions and he's probably the best player in the world in the short roll. And Pete, adjustment number one is figuring out what the hell they're going to do in order to get out of the short roll quandrum.
And this same thing exists when it's Clay coming off of a screen, right? Like, even if you don't start with the ball in your hands, the same sort of dynamic plays up.
And it does, but Clay's going to shoot a bunch. He shot all the time coming off of that. So it was different, but yes.
He did, but it's also because that's another place where the level of the screen can be adjusted or they can switch. We'll talk more adjustments going forward, Mike, but please.
But this is also, this is an X and O thing, but it's also just the urgency with which they played it and them going to what they know is going to work. Think about how LeBron played game 6 against Memphis. Just like catch, boom, immediate quick decision, go to the basket. Otherwise, like playing with purpose, essentially. And that's how the Warriors played. They played with a very specific and direct purpose. And the Lakers kind of just did what the Warriors allowed them to do. Hey, here's an open jump shot from 20 feet. You want that one? Yep, just going to pull that. Not going to think about getting a screen or getting a different defender on. Or, you know, LeBron wasn't trying to hunt Steph. And, you know, AD was not trying to really go at Draymond and get – like they sort of – and I'm not – this is not a disparaging comment for me. This is part of the whole thing of how many of the Lakers' resources do they want to devote to this game when they know Golden State's going to be locked in this whole time relative to what they think they can get done at home in trying to replicate the Memphis series. And in that sense, I actually think that it's a little bit dangerous in the context of the Memphis series because Golden State isn't Memphis, but like the Lakers know that they could essentially trick off game 2 when the other team is going to bring this massive effort and then get back home. And I think they might've played with a little bit more purpose if they hadn't had that experience in Memphis where it all worked out a certain way. And they would have had to bring a whole nother effort level. And that's a lot to ask. So, but that was even that little simple Warriors action to me is part of what we saw that.
we've seen coaches, Kerr fits this description in game one. And also we saw this with Frank Vogel where, and I think this is true of Darvin as well, where a coach isn't going to change their base coverage in a playoff series until they have to. We saw this with Frank where it was like, yeah, we're going to start JaVale in game one against the Rockets and because that's what we do, right? And then we lose game one and it's like, okay, JaVale's on the bench for the rest of the series and the Lakers handle business going forward, right? Even at the beginning of this series, there was not a version of this where like, Looney has difficulty defending AD. And so that was always going to be a bad matchup for them if they started that way. But Looney was super helpful on Sabonis. And so they carried that over from the previous series, then change into a better shape for the Lakers. And so I expect the Lakers to do something similar in game three. So let's take a break when we come back. Let's talk about some of those potential adjustments.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, D, they're in a really good rhythm. They shot 45%+ from three in the two games. And that's somewhat a function of how the Lakers defend, of which you gave some of the details there. What are some of the ways to help get Golden State out of the rhythm that they're in? Because they're a team, and Kerr spoke to this in postgame, that they've seen every defense that there is, right? So there's nothing that the Lakers can do that will surprise them. But I think the Lakers do have some cards to play. I think switching is going, we're eventually going to end in that type of spot because the Lakers have more guys who can move their feet on the perimeter a little bit, right? Like, because if the idea is to force jump shots, which I think is the ultimate idea of the Darvin's defense, right? And jump shots from the right guys off of the right pass, you know, catching across your body as opposed to while you're square up to the hoop, things like that. I think that breaking the rhythm of them is important. And so all of the off-screen action, the Steph on ball, we talked about this, right? Like them running more ball screens with Steph. I think that that's something that we have more guys that can do that where there isn't our five in particular is not an isolatable one-on-one defender. Now our four might be. I'm curious if LeBron can do that and LeBron can stick with and dance with guys on the perimeter. But that is the thing that generally slows down actions. There are ways to beat it. And when you switch at the point of the switch is actually vulnerable to a pull-up three because you're not sure is this like when you're switching the guy you're defending to another teammate, there's a point in between where you transition from one player to the other and that can give up some open jumpers. But by and large, I think that that's probably the Lakers' best route to go. And I guess I'm curious on that, on the thought of switching more against them.
I think it's an option. I think if they go to that full time, the Lakers are going to lose. If you gave the truth serum to Steve Kerr and Steph Curry, they might tell you, yeah, AD's a difficult defender to deal with. If they could consistently get AD switched on Steph Curry, it's not like the play ends at that point and all eight other players go sit down and this becomes like a one-on-one at like the Rucker. They're not just going to say like, oh, we got it. This is what we wanted. We wanted this. The thing about the Warriors is that they are the merry-go-round that does not stop offensively. You get on, and then when you get off, they don't slow the damn thing down for you. It's just like, oh, it's time to get off. And there's just like mattresses or something like on the side. And you just jump off and roll. And then, oh, wait, great. That was fun. If they get AD switched on to Steph consistently, and that is the plan, they are then going to run all of their relocation stuff and all of that. And they're going to put AD in the ringer at that point. And they're, and if it's just like, oh, we're going to switch, then they're going to keep going until they get the switch that they want. That's then going to lead to the thing where they're able to drive and kick and end up with an open three. I'm not saying switching is absolutely like, oh, you can never switch. I just think that that's got to be a part of a larger package of defensive adjustments that the Lakers have at their disposal. And the thing about the Warriors is you can't just go to one thing and sit in one thing because they're too good and they've seen everything before. And Mike, I think of switching against the Warriors, the level of awareness that you need to have as a switching team against them and which actions you are going to switch and which actions you aren't. And if it's not a switch, especially if it's not us, we're switching everything, then that's where those, that touch point idea that you spoke about, Pete, about like where the confusion is. Once you have to think as a switching team, then it's like, it's in that moment of processing that you will get beat by a team that is sort of this lightning strike offensive team like the Warriors. And so I'm open to the idea. I just don't know if that's going to be the ultimate, like, ah, this is the solution for you. I think it needs to be a part of a larger diet that they throw at them.
I'll just try to keep it simple. And I talked to a player after the game, and since it wasn't technically an on-camera, on-the-record combo, so I won't say who it was, but it was basically just they just need to do – they have to have more activity with what they do normally than they did that game. And switching, I think, would be a good look for part of the game, but like Darius said, you know, there isn't any one look that you can just keep throwing to the Warriors into stuff that they haven't seen. They're not going to dissect, just like with LeBron James. You can't just keep doing the same thing against LeBron out there and not eventually have it be taken advantage of. But if Anthony Davis is one touch point, we already mentioned Vanderbilt earlier. I think that, you know, Austin with his legs I don't know if it's just his legs. I haven't asked him, but it looks like his legs, right? Where he's having to keep up with Clay in the way that he does things and then go down and be expected to create something on offense when LeBron isn't being as aggressive either, you know, and Russell is scoring, but it's mostly just in kind of ISO step back jumper types where nobody else is breaking things down for him.
Yes. And that's one of the reason I'm advocating switching is that you have to chase people around less in that case. And that, like, I think it has an impact on the offensive end as well.
Yeah. So I can buy that for sure, but it's that being one part of it. And then the other part just being if they're simply just more crisp and more desperate and more energetic in general, which they will be. And this is and I'll continue to what sounds like a litany of excuses, which is really just explanations for a team that's on the road. You know, when you are on day three or four in that city and that other team, that's where the level of desperation starts to increase in the for the home team. And I think that that's now what the Lakers have to try and channel and think about how Golden State played on the road for this year. And now, will they get a Golden State that is from that game too, that is smelling some blood? Or will they get the team now that's going to give back from an energy and effort standpoint in a way that they didn't in game two? And then all of a sudden, whatever defense that you run looks better. And whatever type of scheme that you're employing is going to look pretty crisp. And this is what happens when you ask a coach after the game about the defense and they're sort of like, well, they just didn't execute what we wanted. And that happens more, I feel like, in the NFL. But if they just do what we ask them to do better, then things will be fine. And you don't have to necessarily completely switch your scheme even though it seemed like they would certainly have to, if you just would have watched game two and been like, well, that clearly wasn't working.
No, and that is right at the top of the reasons why, you know, a scheme doesn't work. I think we're super dependent on ball pressure and deflections and high hand. One of the themes of the cutaways for both coaches over the course of these first two games have been, they've been cutting and both coaches have had their hands up in the air, like telling their players high hands, which is one of the things you'll hear coaches at every level, right, really get into. And so that kind of speaks to the point, right, is that if you can't bother them at the first point of attack, as we always say, there's a chain reaction after that where they just have so much space and it's nice and clean. Darius, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, but also the offensive end. We didn't play particularly well on the offensive end either, and I think the switch in the matchups plays into that a lot. So take that whatever direction you want to go.
Yeah, so one last point defensively. One of the things that also changed is that AD went from defending Looney, who was in the starting lineup, to defending Draymond. And that put LeBron on Jermichael Green. And Jermichael Green was mostly in the corner, weak side. And one of the things I saw, I sent you guys a screenshot of this, and it was a screenshot from a breakdown that Tim Legler did on SportsCenter after the game. And Tim Legler is great. He's one of the guys I really enjoy listening and watching what he takes from a certain play or from a game, because he has a specific insight that I think is very good for NBA analysis. Anyways, the point I showed you, or the picture that I sent you guys, was the pick and roll setup that I showed before. And right as Steph was making the pocket pass to Draymond, and Draymond's going to go right downhill. And the alignment of where the Lakers players are is suboptimal, I should say. And it's because LeBron has 1 foot in the paint, but is closer to Jermichael Green than he is to the restricted, like to act to Draymond Green. And if that's no man's land against the Warriors.
Yeah, you're not helping either in either player.
And if you end up in no man's land against the Warriors, the only player on the Lakers defense who I think can survive in no man's land against the Warriors is Anthony Davis. Because Anthony Davis is 6'11", and when he decides he's going to get somewhere, he's going to get there. And he's the type of guy that could feint and jab and inspire a certain amount of second guessing. So one of the interesting cat and mouse games that I'd like to see is if the Lakers don't switch up their scheme, as sort of, I'm not saying Mike was implying that that's the plan, just that idea of the thing that we can do it better. So, and the types of adjustments and tweaks may not be these radical things like,
sure,
oh, we're going to start switching, or we're going to start trapping at the point of attack, which are things like the Lakers are more than capable of doing, but it has not been a part of their arsenal.
Yeah, we haven't done a ton of it. Yeah.
Right. And so one of the things that I might look for is like, hey, LeBron, you defended Draymond the last game. Time for you to go do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And AD, I know that they're going to try to space shoot to the corner. If Jermichael Green shoots 23s this game, he's going to shoot 23s when he's in the game.
Let me just pause you on the LeBron and Draymond thought, because this gets back to basically the overarching theory about what was going to happen to this Laker team, like in LeBron and what does he have in his legs and all that. Well, Draymond was killing in all of those settings in the short roll and making all those decisions. Well, if LeBron wanted to just stop that, now it's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of legs. It's going to take a lot of energy, but he can. LeBron has that capability of just nullifying, for the most part, what Draymond can do in that action. And I think that this is where I get back to. I don't know that he was going to do that in game two, but I think that that's something that we will see as the series wears on. And it's just like, so it's not necessarily a different idea or scheme or anything like that. It's just LeBron knowing which games he really has to bring that level to. And then what do the Warriors do in their offense once you take that away? Well, then it gets back to basically Steph having to do stuff by himself. And by the way, same thing with Klay. Like if somebody's having trouble staying with him, then have somebody else stay with him. Or like there are,
sure,
there are,
they could have a lot of cards to play.
And this is to get back to that same player that I was discussing something with. I think that when we're watching, we have the benefit of thinking, why don't they just do this right now? What are they doing? Why aren't they making an adjustment? Well, sometimes you save the big adjustment for the next game if you have a really experienced group. And that's not necessarily where the Lakers coaching staff are. Of course, it's Darvin in his first year as a head coach, but these guys have been around. But LeBron certainly knows that part, you know, and AD knows that part, and Tristan Thompson knows that part. And you've got this other club in your bag, but let's make that remember the Memphis series when Memphis made that big run and they Ja was getting going. And I was like, I'm actually glad that they did that. They had that. And this wasn't a scheme switch. It was just like the way that they were playing at the end of game three when the Lakers were up 30 or whatever. And I was glad that Memphis had that run then, as opposed to in game four, when the Lakers did start really well in game four before they almost tricked it off at the end of the second quarter. And so the start of game three, though, the Warriors are going to expect the big punch from the Lakers, and I think they're going to get it, you know, as opposed to, hey, they gave their big punch and we still won by 12. Anyway, a couple of scattered thoughts there.
I think you're spot on with that. And to build on that point, I think a big part of that big punch, D, is LeBron on defense, right? We've talked about the Kobe analogy of at that age, you've only got so many bullets left to fire. And I think we mostly think of that as an offensive type of thing. And I think we'll need that a little bit from LeBron, but I think it's way more on the defensive end. LeBron knows what these guys do, right? And he knows their plays, he knows their actions, but he's going to have to be able to access a certain level of energy and intensity to be able to do that. That I think Mike talking about game three being a big punch, I think that's one of the big ways LeBron can do it.
No, it's going to be on defense, and it's going to be on defense from not just LeBron, but from everyone. It's going to be Vanderbilt. It's going to be AD. We're going to get to offense in a second because I do have some thoughts about that stuff, Pete. But it's just like the Lakers are a defensive team. Both teams know it. After the game, Draymond, even after game one, and Steph said this too, it's like we don't want to play against that team in the half court. We've got to try to find a way to speed up the game. And the Warriors were great at that. Like it's one of the reasons why after the game, LeBron said credit to them. They played great and they adjusted. They did the stuff that we thought they were going to do, not necessarily like that can sound dismissive, but it's just like LeBron knew they were going to adjust. The Lakers knew they were going to adjust. The shape and the nature and the extremes of those adjustments were not quite known. And the Lakers sort of sat back and they leaned on the ropes and they got knocked down and they lost a 10-8 round after winning a 10-9 round the game before. But this ain't boxing. They're not up on the scorecards. In fact, the Lakers have home court advantage and now they're at home. I'm enjoying the chess match. The offensive part of this, though, is more interesting to me, Pete, because that idea that Mike mentioned about taking a lot of jumpers and not playing is downhill. That putting Draymond at the point of attack in terms of what the Lakers want to do, which is putting him on Anthony Davis, created a bit of a buffer around the paint because AD was not getting all the way downhill as easily as he was before. And Draymond is an elite pick and roll defender. And we saw a little bit more of what it looked like against Memphis in this game because they were able to help off of Vanderbilt with Jermichael Green instead of helping off of Vanderbilt with Steph Curry. And so Draymond started on Vanderbilt before and he was a helper, but then Steph got into foul trouble in game one. So they put Steph on Vando, right? And then they put Draymond on D'Lo a fair amount of time.
And he played a little bit on D'Lo in game two as well. And this kind of like will break up the Lakers pick and roll action because they just switch it. Draymond ends up guarding AD or whomever set the screen. And he's exactly. Totally fine at that and kind of blows up the action.
And so one of the things that has to happen for AD is he's got to try to find his way to get 2 feet in the paint a little bit more often. There are little tweaks that they can do. The Lakers have that pet action of setting a wide pin down for AD. The Warriors in game one were trying to go over the top of that screen, or they were trying to shoot the gap in order to meet AD at the point of attack. So they would meet him closer to like the dotted line area, like, hey, we're going to collide. And this game, and in game two, they just started top blocking him. And they're just like, we're not even going to let you use the screen at all. And AD didn't really counter to that very much. I started saying, like, one of the things I'd love to do is see him, like, just run back door right
and he
away.
Did,
like,
and he got hit right in the hands and he fumbled it, right? And,
yeah, but
it was there.
But there's little tweaks, man. It's just like, but the Lakers didn't deploy much of that, Mike. And so finding ways to get AD downhill more, it's going to be trickier with Draymond. But AD is also like any sort of low center of gravity defensive player. This is going to come down to AD doing his work early a lot of times.
Yeah.
And it's a different mindset. It's a different level of ferociousness and force that he's going to have to play with. And there's that word again. The Warriors said that they were the ones that played with force, and they were. And the Lakers are going to have to punch back, and they're going to have to punch back early. And I think AD in the post, LeBron in the post, more. Like, these are things that if the Lakers really want to slow the game down, these are the ways to do it. I'm interested, though, in how successful Draymond or AD in the post against Draymond Green is going to be. And like, that's going to be a push and pull a little bit, but they have to diversify the ways that they're trying to get AD involved.
Well, you could see that the Lakers were pretty frustrated last night, specifically with the AD and Draymond matchup. And we talked about it before the game, like Draymond's going to push. He's going to push in smart ways. He's going to use all of the different tricks that he's learned over the years. And he did. And AD tries to stay kind of even keel, but you could tell he was a little frustrated. Phil Handy eventually gets a tech. And I'm pretty sure without specifically asking Phil that's what he was berating the official who was just watching Draymond be all over AD on a possession. And then they called AD for a whistle on the glass. And that was when they lost it. It was just like, hold on. You're going to allow all that contact in this. But this is what happens when one team is the aggressor. It's always happened that way. It's human nature. The referees cannot be exempt from that. And so what's going to happen in game three? Are they going to allow Draymond to be as handsy? And if so, that's when AD, instead of just sort of accepting that's what it's going to be, he can go at Draymond in different ways. Like he is not, there is no player in the world that Anthony Davis cannot eventually break down. By either going around or through or over. He's got all three things that he can do. And I just think that they are too, when I say that the Lakers are settling, it's mostly referring to either Anthony Davis settling or everybody else settling to not keep going to Anthony Davis in certain contexts. Because that's still, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but that's to me where part of game three is, part of this context is LeBron, how many drives are you going to have? But I do think there's a limited number of drives that LeBron can have and should have each game. Mm-hmm. There is not a limit as to how much Anthony Davis should be able to attack, even if it's Draymond Green. And if that means that if let's say Draymond is having a fantastic defensive game and he's not fouling, okay, great. Then have some, go have a guard screen him or something. Like, just do something that doesn't just allow him to take AD's shot attempts down to 11, through three quarters without any free throws.
Yeah, I think that AD can get Draymond in foul trouble with how he plays him, but it requires AD to play with a certain level of force himself. And then I thought Darius really hit the nail on the head in terms of doing your work early and getting into advantageous positions in which Draymond has no choice but to foul. You want to, in that matchup, if everything is set and everybody's still, that's advantage Draymond. But yes, if there's movement going on, if there's, AD's a superior athlete, right? But he doesn't always play with the same level of force. And I think the stat that always reveals that the most is his rebounding, right? Like when he's not on offense, or he's not, we're not getting him enough shot attempts, he can have like a 14 point, but 21 rebound type of game, right? But when he's really, when he's not playing with a ton of force, it's, what was he last night, 11-7 or something like that? And so the rebounding, I think, is an area as well where he can pick up some foul trouble on Draymond. And so it does come down to a certain level of oomph that he's got to play with, D. But I think that is an area where he can attack Draymond in terms of getting him in foul trouble.
AD is 6'11 or 7 feet, and Draymond's 6'6. It's what makes Draymond special. It's like he can play like a with a crazy wingspan, right? 6'6" with like, I don't know, 7'2" wingspan or something crazy. But AD's got to play with a foot in the paint. And a foot in the paint, like around the restricted area or the dotted line, not a foot in the paint, like I'm at the elbow. If AD has to create off of the dribble against Draymond Green, that's an advantage to Draymond Green. Draymond has lower center of gravity. He's got great hands. He's a multiple time defensive player of the year award winner. Like he is this generation's probably best defensive player. Shout out to Rudy Gobert. So the idea that
you don't have to shout Rudy out there. Draymond's much better than Rudy. You got it.
No, that's my point. It's just like, you know,
awards are stupid.
Like Gobert got Gobert got more trophies, but you know,
there we go.
Yes.
Thank you.
So my point is, Pete, is like doing that work early and finding ways to like for AD to use his size in order to overwhelm or attempt to overwhelm Draymond and initiate some of that contact himself and bring that level of like, oh no, you're either going to foul me or I'm going to score over the top of you. Like AD is more than capable of that, whether or not he's going to do that seven games in a row. Like, mm-hmm. I think we know that that's not going to be the case. And that's no demerit to Anthony Davis. He's asked to do everything for this team. And that's the point of being a superstar player, I guess. I'm also much more interested to see like what AD's engagement level is defensively as well, because as I said before, the Lakers are going to win this series on defense if they win it all. Like there are solutions they need to find better. They need to find better solutions offensively as well. But part of those solutions, Pete, are going to be based off of like getting more stops
and getting in transition
and playing in transition and playing in early offense more and just playing with more pace. One of the dunks that AD got in game one was off of a made basket that the Warriors scored and the Lakers pushed it back the other way. LeBron got in the middle of the court. AD was running the floor and LeBron threw him a nice little lob when Draymond had to step up to try to stop LeBron. And that was off of a make.
Mm-hmm. We weren't running like that last night.
No, and look, and I hate to speak about games like this in those terms where it's everything the Lakers didn't do, right? And that's why I'm saying again, like credit to the Warriors.
Like LeBron
they
said,
put the Lakers back on their heels, and the Lakers were wrong-footed all night, and they weren't wrong-footed because they were taking the wrong steps. They were wrong-footed because the Warriors put them there. And so game three, Mike, is going to be so much more about like the Lakers getting on the right track with the things that they can control.
Well, in one of these games, the Warriors aren't going to hit 20-plus threes. One of them.
They've hit some amazing shots. Like that no-dip three in the corner in the first quarter from Klay, which it's not like, oh, I can't believe Klay Thompson did that. That's not what I'm saying. It's just like 10 out of 10 level of difficulty where he's drifting to his right, which is harder for a right-handed player. It's easier for a right-handed player to be moving left because they're already squared up to the basket. Drifting right, he catches it up high and never brings it down and lets it go. Austin gets a good contest on it. He stayed decently attached, but he made the shot and they're going to do that. But the degree that they've done that in the first two games has been super high.
Yeah, they're going to hit threes, but they're not going to hit 20 plus threes on 40 plus percent shooting, which they've done in both games. They're just not going to. So that's another adjustment where the Lakers don't have to do anything different. Even if they just play the same defense and they have the same lack of energy, Golden State, I'm sorry, is not going to go 21 for 42 from three. It just even as great as they are. So there is going to be some regression, just like there was, I forgot to call this out because Darius was expecting some LeBron shooting regression in the other way. And that did happen, right?
It did.
And so like some of these things over the course of a series, they have to go back to what is at least somewhat normal. And that will happen as well for Golden State.
And if they don't, the Warriors are going to win.
That's right.
I hate to say it, but it's just like if Mike, if they're like if they're 20 for 45
if they have
on three
series
in game
of all
three,
time in NBA history, then they're going
to
win.
100%. And to be clear, Steph and Klay and Poole, even to a certain extent, they are more than capable of getting hot. The thing the Lakers need to start to do is take away a lot of or do better at limiting the swing wide open to like a quality or okay shooter, but they're in such a rhythm
And that, they're wide
and
open.
That's where it snowballed for me in game two. It was just like, oh, these dudes are in such a rhythm right now because the game is easy for them. And part of the reasons why it was easy was because of the tactics that the Lakers deployed defensively. And that just needs to tighten up.
And to just kind of further add one little other point on that we've talked about a little bit, but to emphasize it, the way that the Lakers are playing offense is also getting them, getting Golden State off the hook, because they were not having to defend multiple actions. They were defending one action, and the Lakers were either making or missing, and then they were going down and getting to do whatever the hell they wanted to do. And when the Lakers start to make you work on that end as well, then all of those threes that seem like they're in rhythm and you're walking into, that's the part of the game, mm-hmm. like the rhythm yep. of the game, Pete, that you talk about a lot. And that was off that game. I think it'll be back on in game three.
I think you're spot on your point about ball movement and ball reversal and how that contributes to that rhythm. Is the Lakers were letting them off the hook in terms of one action. This is a sort of open shot. Yeah, we'll take it, right? When they could have worked it around a little bit more. So either way, the champs threw a hell of a punch in game two, and Lakers are going to have to bring it to win game three. And so is the crowd. I can't wait to hear the crowd in game three in this just epic Western Conference series. We will be back after that game to discuss how it went either Saturday night or more likely Sunday morning. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds, Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane, back for Gasol, pretty pass, and it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move, two, one,
miss it!
Bryant, unbelievable. It's over.
And shot clock now to five. Bryant, yes!
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.